Hey everyone, and welcome to our deep dive into Gnosticism.
A fascinating topic for sure.
Yeah, you've sent us a really interesting collection of articles about these Gnostic texts.
It's great.
And it seems like you're really looking to explore what they are and like what they might tell us about, you know, the nature of reality, the divine, and our place in all of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's really at the heart of Gnosticism is this idea that there is this sort of deeper reality, a deeper truth that we need to kind of uncover or awaken to.
So before we get too deep, can we just like define Gnosticism for anyone who's just tuning in?
Sure.
I mean, it's not like mainstream thinking ever.
It's not mainstream thinking. And it actually emerged, you know, in the early centuries of Christianity, but it presented a very different path, a different understanding of things.
Yeah.
And at its core, it's really about gnosis, which is the Greek word for knowledge.
Okay.
But it's not just any knowledge. It's more like a direct, intuitive experience of the divine.
So less about dogma and rules and more about this like personal internal discovery.
Exactly. It's very much about personal spiritual experience and seeking inner wisdom.
Interesting. So Gnostics almost saw themselves as seekers then, right?
They did.
Uncovering these hidden truths.
Exactly. And they believed that true freedom came from this inner knowing, this gnosis, from aligning yourself with this deeper spiritual reality.
That's a really intriguing concept.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they were wrestling with some of the same big questions that like philosophers and, you know, spiritual seekers have been grappling with for centuries.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these are questions that are sort of timeless and universal, right? And I think one of the ways this struggle plays out in these texts is through this very unique take on the nature of God and creation.
Okay. So you've definitely piqued my curiosity here.
Okay.
So how about we jump into some of these texts?
Let's do it.
You mentioned the Gospel of Thomas, and I have to say, just the idea of sayings attributed to Jesus that aren't in the traditional Bible, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a lost gospel in a way, and it really highlights this emphasis on personal revelation and inner transformation.
So what makes these sayings so different? What kind of wisdom are we talking about here?
Well, for one, they're not focused on miracles or prophecies. They're more like these cryptic riddles or koans that are meant to kind of provoke thought and introspection.
Okay.
And one of the most famous lines from the Gospel of Thomas is the opening line, which says, "Whoever discovers the interpretation of these sayings will not taste death."
Wow.
Now, they're not talking about physical death here. They're talking about a kind of spiritual awakening, transcending the limitations of our ordinary perception.
That's a powerful statement. And it seems to tie into that idea of seeking knowledge as a path to liberation.
Exactly. And there are many other sayings in the Gospel of Thomas that point to the idea that the kingdom of heaven is not this physical place. It's an inner state of being. And there's one that says, "The kingdom of heaven is inside of you and it is outside of you. When you come to know yourselves, then you will become known and you will realize that it is you who are the sons of the living Father."
Wow, that's deep. It challenges the idea that we need to look outside ourselves for the answers for salvation.
Right. It's about recognizing the divine spark that's already within each of us.
Yeah.
And that's a theme that runs through many of the Gnostic texts.
Okay, but the idea of a flawed material world plays into this too, right?
It does.
I mean, if we have this divine spark within, why are we stuck here in this often messy and difficult reality?
That's a great question. And I think to answer that, we need to turn to a text called The Hypostasis of the Archons, which deals with some pretty complex Gnostic cosmology.
All right, I'm ready to get a little mind blown here. What can you tell me about it?
So this text introduces this concept of the Archons,
okay. These
sort of lower level divine beings who govern the material world. And they're not necessarily evil, but they represent limitations and ignorance that keep us bound to this material realm.
So they're kind of like cosmic gatekeepers in a way.
In a sense, yes, they are.
Keeping us from accessing that higher spiritual reality.
Yeah, and this text also tells the story of Sophia, who's this divine being representing wisdom, who falls from the Pleroma, the fullness of the divine realm.
Okay, hold on. I need to catch up here.
Okay.
Pleroma, Sophia's fall. Can we just unpack this a bit more?
Sure. So the Pleroma is this realm of pure spiritual light and perfection,
okay. Where
the true God resides. And Sophia, in her yearning for knowledge, kind of makes a mistake and falls from this realm, leading to the creation of the material world.
So creation is seen as a consequence of this fall, this separation from true wisdom.
It is, and it ties into this Gnostic idea of the material world being flawed, imperfect, a kind of shatter of the true spiritual reality.
Okay, so we've got these archons keeping us trapped, a fallen Sophia leading to the creation of this material world. Where does that leave us humans in all of this?
Right. Are we just doomed?
Are we just doomed?
To wander around in this flawed reality forever.
Right.
And the answer is not necessarily.
Right.
Remember, gnosis is key.
Yep.
The pursuit of knowledge of self-discovery is seen as the path to liberation.
So it's about finding our way back to that divine spark, that connection to the Pleroma.
Exactly. And this journey of spiritual awakening is often depicted in these texts as a kind of ascent through different realms of existence. And a great example of this is Pistς Sophia.
Okay, Sophia again. This time she's the main character. I'm sensing she's a pretty important figure in Gnostic thought.
She is a central figure. And in Pistes Sophia, we see Sophia repenting for her fall, and she's navigating these different realms,
okay,
seeking redemption and ultimately returning to the light.
So it's like a cosmic redemption story.
Mm.
And how does this relate to like our own journey, our own search for meaning?
Well, I think it speaks to the idea that even in our flawed state, even though we're kind of trapped in this material realm,
right,
we still have this potential for spiritual growth and transformation.
Yeah.
We can learn from Sophia's mistakes and strive to reconnect with our true selves, with the divine.
This is all incredibly thought-provoking, and I love how these texts aren't just like presenting abstract ideas.
Right.
They're telling stories, offering these metaphors that help us grasp these really complex spiritual concepts.
They do. And speaking of metaphors, the second treatise of the great Seth takes a really interesting approach to the figure of Jesus.
Oh, yeah. I remember you mentioned that Gnostics had a different view of Jesus than traditional Christianity.
They did.
What's their take?
They often saw him as a revealer of hidden knowledge, a guide to gnosis rather than a sacrificial savior.
Okay, so more of a teacher, a mystic who kind of points the way.
Exactly. And in the second treatise of the great Seth, it's written from Seth's perspective.
Interesting.
Presenting a very strong dualistic worldview and emphasizing this idea of Jesus as this bringer of light into the darkness of the material world.
It's fascinating how these texts challenge our conventional understanding of such a central figure in Western spirituality.
Hmm.
So we've talked about the Gospel of Thomas, the hypothesis of the Archons, Pistes Sophia, and now the second treatise of the great Seth. It seems like we're starting to build this picture of how Gnostics viewed the world, the divine, and the path to liberation.
I think we are, and as we explore more of these texts, we'll see these core Gnostic ideas expressed in different ways, with each text offering its own unique insights and perspectives.
Perfect. I'm ready to keep going, but let's just take a quick moment to recap what we've learned so far before we dive into that next text.
Sure. So we've established that Gnosticism really centers around a gnosis, this direct experiential knowledge of the divine.
Okay.
We've seen how they view the material world as flawed, a consequence of Sophia's fall from the Pleroma, the realm of spiritual perfection.
Right.
We've also touched on their unique interpretation of Jesus as a revealer of hidden knowledge. And we've begun to see how these ideas play out in texts like the Gospel of Thomas, the Hypostasis of the Archons, Pistes Sophia, and the Second Treatise of the Great Seth.
Okay, that's a great summary. I feel like we're starting to piece together this fascinating, albeit complex, puzzle.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? What other texts should we explore?
Well, you mentioned earlier about how these texts deal with big questions like the afterlife and judgment, and the Apocalypse of Peter is a really vivid example of how Gnostics approach those themes.
Oh, okay. An apocalypse. That sounds intense. What kind of picture does it paint?
Well, it's definitely not your typical Sunday school material. It offers this incredibly detailed and often graphic depiction of the afterlife, with descriptions of punishments for those who lived in ignorance and rewards for those who pursued gnosis.
So there's still a sense of consequences for our actions,
wow,
even if the focus isn't on sin and redemption in the traditional sense.
Right. It's less about divine judgment and more about the natural consequences of our choices.
Oh.
Those who cling to ignorance and materiality, they suffer, while those who cultivate gnosis and spiritual understanding find liberation.
It almost sounds like a karmic system where our actions create our reality even in the afterlife.
There are definitely parallels there, and what's interesting is that the Apocalypse of Peter suggests that even after death, there's still a chance for redemption through understanding one's errors. It's never too late to seek gnosis.
That's actually a pretty hopeful message.
It is, yeah.
It's not about eternal damnation. It's about recognizing that even in the afterlife, we can continue to evolve and grow spiritually.
Precisely, and that emphasis on understanding, on inner transformation, really sets Gnostic thought apart from more traditional views of the afterlife.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this idea of seeking knowledge within, but there seems to be another recurring theme in these texts, this challenge to external authority.
Right.
It came up in the Gospel of Thomas, and I'm wondering if it shows up in other texts as well.
It definitely does, and one of the most striking examples is the Gospel of Mary. This text highlights the role of Mary Magdalene not just as a follower of Jesus, but as a bearer of wisdom in her own right.
Mary Magdalene. Wow, she's such a fascinating figure. I feel like her story has been reinterpreted and debated for centuries. What makes the Gospel of Mary so unique?
Well, for one, it really challenges the traditional patriarchal hierarchy that you often see in early Christianity.
Right.
Mary Magdalene is portrayed as having this special understanding of Jesus's teachings, even surpassing some of the male disciples.
That's pretty radical for the time period these texts were written.
It is.
It seems like the Gnostics were kind of ahead of their time in recognizing the potential for spiritual insight and leadership in women.
Absolutely. And the text emphasizes that true knowledge comes from within, not from external authorities. Okay. There's a passage that says, "Where the mind is, there is the treasure." It's about cultivating that inner connection to the divine, regardless of your gender or social standing.
I love that. It's a message that still resonates powerfully today as we continue to challenge in traditional power structures and embrace more diverse perspectives on spirituality.
And it's not just about gender roles. And Gnosticism in general is really a critique of this idea of blindly following dogma or relying on external sources for truth. It's about seeking that direct experience of the divine within yourself.
So how does that play out in terms of their views on rituals and sacraments?
Oh, that's a great question.
I mean, those are often seen as so central to religious practice.
They are, and the Gospel of Philip is a fascinating text to look at in this context. It offers a very mystical and symbolic interpretation of sacraments like baptism and the Eucharist.
Okay, symbolism. That seems to be a common thread in these texts.
It is.
How does the Gospel of Philip use symbols to kind of convey these spiritual truths?
Well, it sees these rituals not as literal acts, but as metaphors for inner transformation.
Okay.
So, for example, baptism isn't about washing away sin with water.
Right.
It's about this spiritual rebirth and awakening to your true nature.
So it's about the inner meaning, not the outward form. I'm sensing a pattern here. Gnostics seem to be all about looking beyond the surface, seeking the deeper truths hidden beneath those literal interpretations.
Exactly. And the Gospel of Philip really emphasizes this idea that true transformation happens on an internal level through gnosis, not through these external rituals.
Okay, we're seeing this critique of external authority, this emphasis on inner experience, play out in different ways across these texts. What other texts should we consider to kind of understand this aspect of Gnosticism?
Well, the Gospel of Truth attributed to Valentinus is a really powerful statement about the importance of gnosis and the pitfalls of ignorance. It also offers a really unique interpretation of Jesus as this revealer of truth, a guide to awakening from the slumber of ignorance.
So again, we see Jesus portrayed as this teacher, this catalyst for spiritual awakening. And ignorance is seen as like the real enemy, not sin in the traditional sense.
Exactly. In the Gospel of Truth, ignorance is seen as the root of all suffering, the barrier to experiencing true freedom and unity with the divine.
It makes me wonder, you know, from a Gnostic perspective, what are we actually ignorant of? What truth are we missing?
It's not so much about missing factual information. It's more about being unaware of our true nature, our divine spark, our connection to the source of all being.
So it's like a kind of spiritual amnesia. We've forgotten who we really are.
In a sense, yes. And the pursuit of gnosis is all about remembering, reclaiming that lost connection.
Wow, that's a powerful metaphor. Okay, I feel like we're starting to get a good grasp of these core Gnostic ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Gnosis, the flawed material world, the unique view of Jesus, this challenge to external authority. But we still have a few more texts to cover, right? What about the Apocryphon of John?
This is a key text for understanding Gnostic cosmology.
Okay.
It introduces the concept of the Pleroma, the fullness of the divine realm, and the eons, these divine emanations that represent different aspects of the divine.
Okay, we've touched on the Pleroma before, but what about these eons? It sounds like we're getting into some pretty complex metaphysics here.
The aeons are kind of like these intermediaries between the ultimate unknowable God and the material world.
Okay.
They represent these different qualities or attributes of the divine, like wisdom, love, power, and so on.
So instead of one God, we have this whole hierarchy of divine beings.
Right. It's a much more complex and frankly mind-boggling view of the divine.
It is. And the Apocryphon of John also tells the story of Sophia's fall from the Chloroma, which we've discussed before.
Right.
And how this led to the creation of the Demiurge Yaldabaoth.
Right.
Okay, the Demiurge, that's another term I've heard thrown around in discussions of Gnosticism.
Mm-hmm.
Who or what is this Demiurge?
The Demiurge is basically the creator of the material world.
Okay.
But he's seen as flawed, ignorant of the true God.
Yeah.
He mistakenly believes he is the ultimate power, and his creation kind of reflects this imperfection.
So like a cosmic case of mistaken identity.
In a way, yes.
And we as humans are kind of caught in the middle of this cosmic drama.
Exactly. But the good news is that the Apocryphon of John emphasizes that we have this divine spark within us, a fragment of that true God that the Demiurge is unaware of.
So it's like we have this hidden potential, this connection to the divine that transcends the limitations of this material world.
Precisely. And the pursuit of Gnosis is about awakening to that truth, realizing our true identity as spiritual beings.
Okay. I'm starting to see how all of these ideas kind of fit together.
Yeah.
We've got the Pleroma, the Aeon, Sophia's Fall, the Demiurge, and this inherent divine spark within us. It's a lot to take in, but it's also incredibly fascinating.
It is, and I think the Tripartite Tractate offers a good way to kind of synthesize a lot of these concepts. It takes a very systematic approach to Gnostic cosmology,
okay,
laying out these ideas in a more structured way.
So it's like the Gnostic version of a theological treatise.
You could say that, yeah.
It
really delves deep into the nature of the divine realm, the fall of Sophia, the role of the Demiurge, the creation of the material world, and the path to liberation through Gnosis.
Sounds like a comprehensive overview of Gnostic thought. So before we jump into that, I think it'd be helpful to take a step back and look at the bigger picture. We've explored all these individual Gnostic texts, each with its own unique flavor and perspective. But how does Gnosticism as a whole compare to more traditional religions? What are the key differences that really set it apart?
That's an excellent question. And I think by comparing Gnosticism to more familiar religions like Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, we can really highlight what makes it so unique and, frankly, so challenging to conventional ways of thinking.
Okay, I'm ready for the comparison. Where do we start?
Yeah.
What's the most fundamental difference?
I'd say it's the very nature of God. In traditional monotheistic religions, you have this idea of a single, all-powerful and benevolent God who created the world and governs everything.
Right, one God, the creator, the judge, the source of all good. That's the basic premise.
Exactly. But Gnosticism kind of throws a wrench into that whole concept. Remember those eons we talked about?
Yeah.
Gnosticism often presents this idea of multiple divine beings emanating from a single source.
Okay.
It's a much more complex and, frankly, mind-boggling view of the divine.
So instead of one God, you have this whole hierarchy of divine beings, each with their own roles and attributes. That's a pretty big difference right off the bat.
Yeah.
And how does that affect their view of creation?
Well, in traditional religions, creation is seen as this act of God, something orderly and good, even if there's a fall from grace involved. But in many Gnostic texts, creation is seen as a result of error, even ignorance. Remember Sophia and her fall?
Yeah, the idea that the material world is somehow flawed because of this separation from true wisdom.
Exactly.
It's almost like a cosmic accident in some of these texts.
Exactly. And that leads us to another major point of divergence, the concept of salvation.
Hmm.
In traditional religions, salvation is often tied to faith, obedience, maybe even God's grace.
Right, following the rules, believing in the right things, and hoping for the best in the afterlife.
But Gnosticism flips the script. For them, salvation isn't about these external factors. It's
right.
about knowledge, about gnosis.
Right.
It's about awakening to your true spiritual nature and escaping this flawed material world.
So it's not about pleasing God or following a set of doctrines. It's about self-discovery, inner transformation.
Yeah.
It's a pretty radical shift.
It is. And this difference in perspective also affects how Gnosticism views human nature. Traditional religions often see humans as inherently flawed, maybe even sinful.
Yeah, we're all kind of messed up and in need of some kind of redemption.
But Gnosticism, while acknowledging that we're trapped in this flawed material world, still believes in this divine spark within us.
Right.
It's about realizing that potential, that inner divinity.
So it's not about being inherently bad. It's about being ignorant of our true nature, our connection to the divine. Okay, that makes sense. But there's one more piece of the puzzle, right? The whole issue of authority.
You're right. That's a big one. Traditional religions often rely on these external authorities, scriptures, priests, prophets, to guide people.
Yeah, there's a strong emphasis on following the rules and teachings laid out by those authorities.
But Gnosticism challenges that.
Yeah.
It's all about internal authority.
Okay.
About seeking wisdom within. It's about trusting your own intuition and your own spiritual insights.
So instead of blind faith or following dogma, it's about personal revelation. Finding your own path. Wow, when you lay it out like that, the differences are pretty stark.
They are, and I think that's why Gnosticism remains so relevant today.
Yeah.
It offers this different way of thinking about spirituality, one that resonates with people who are searching for meaning outside of those traditional religious structures.
That's a great point. It's not about rejecting religion altogether. It's about exploring alternative paths, different ways of connecting with the divine.
Exactly. And it's about asking those big questions,
yeah,
challenging assumptions, and seeking a deeper understanding of ourselves and the universe.
Okay, I'm feeling pretty energized by our Gnosticism crash course. We've looked at the texts, we've compared it to traditional religions, and I think I have a much better grasp of what sets it apart.
Me too. And I think you're well equipped to dive even deeper into these fascinating texts on your own.
I am. You know, one thing that really struck me about all of this is how these Gnostic texts, despite being written centuries ago, still have so much to offer us today.
Absolutely. They force us to ask questions, challenge assumptions, and consider alternative perspectives.
I love how they make you rethink the nature of reality.
Right.
Like, what if the material world is actually flawed, as Gnosticism suggests? How might that change our approach to life, our values, our relationships?
That's a great question. If we shift our understanding of ourselves and the world around us, it naturally begs the question, what does this mean for how we live our lives?
Yeah.
Are we simply trying to escape this flawed world, or is there something more, some kind of wisdom or knowledge that can help us navigate it in a new way?
Yeah, it's not just about escaping reality, but about seeing it with new eyes.
Right.
Recognizing the divine spark within ourselves and all things. That's powerful.
It is. And those are the kinds of questions that Gnosticism really invites us to explore. It's about finding that balance between recognizing the limitations of the material world and embracing the potential for spiritual growth and transformation within that context.
It's definitely given me a lot to think about. So we're seeing this idea that the material world is flawed, right?
Yeah.
Like even a bit of a trap.
Yeah.
But we also keep hearing about this divine spark within us.
Right.
Is that the key to navigating this tricky reality? To like find that balance you were talking about.
I think that's a great way to put it. And I think that's where gnosis, that direct experience of the divine, really comes in. It's not just about intellectual knowledge.
Right.
It's about tapping into that inner wisdom, that connection to something greater than ourselves.
So how do we actually cultivate that? I mean, these texts are full of symbolism and metaphors. Is there like a practical side to Gnosticism, something we can actually apply to our everyday lives?
Well, there are definitely practices and disciplines that Gnostics engaged in to cultivate gnosis. Things like meditation, contemplation, even ritual practices designed to kind of connect with that inner divine spark.
It makes sense that they wouldn't just sit around theorizing about the universe, right?
Right.
They'd want to actually put those ideas into practice to experience that transformation.
Yeah,
for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But, and, you know, even if we don't subscribe to all of the Gnostic beliefs, there's a lot we can learn from their emphasis on introspection,
yeah,
on seeking wisdom within.
Totally. It's about taking that inward journey, right? Exploring our own consciousness and connecting with that source of truth and guidance that transcends dogma and external authority.
Beautifully put. And, you know, one thing we haven't explicitly touched on is the role of ethics in Gnosticism.
Oh, wait.
It's often assumed that because they saw the material world as flawed,
right,
they didn't care about morality or ethical behavior.
Interesting. So what did ethical living look like for Gnostics? Was it just about escaping this material realm? Or did they have a sense of responsibility to the world and to each other?
Well, while the ultimate goal was spiritual liberation, many Gnostic texts emphasize the importance of ethical conduct. They saw it as a natural consequence of gnosis.
Okay.
When you realize your true nature, your connection to the divine,
right,
it's reflected in how you treat yourself and how you treat others.
So it's not about following a set of rules imposed from the outside.
Right.
It's about living in alignment with that inner wisdom.
Exactly.
That understanding of interconnectedness.
Precisely. And that often involved things like compassion, kindness, honesty, and striving to live in harmony with the natural world.
It seems like there's a real sense of responsibility that comes with gnosis.
Uh-huh.
It's not just about personal enlightenment. It's about recognizing that our actions have consequences.
Right.
That we're all part of something bigger than ourselves.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's one of the most powerful messages that Gnosticism offers us today.
Yeah.
In a world that often feels very fragmented and chaotic.
Right.
It reminds us of our interconnectedness, our shared humanity, and the potential for spiritual growth and transformation that exists within each of us.
I love that. It's not just about escaping the world, but about engaging with it in a more conscious, compassionate, and meaningful way.
Absolutely. And I think that's a message worth reflecting on as,
yeah,
we continue our own journeys of self-discovery and spiritual exploration.
Well, I have to say, this deep dive into Gnosticism has been incredibly enlightening. I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of this ancient but still relevant spiritual tradition.
Me too. And I hope this conversation has sparked your curiosity and giving you some new insights and perspectives to ponder.
It definitely has.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we wrap up, I'm left with this thought. If the material world is flawed, as Gnosticism suggests, maybe our task isn't to escape it, but to find ways to bring more light into it, to embody that divine spark in our thoughts, words, and actions.
That's a beautiful and powerful way to put it. It's about recognizing that potential for transformation, both within ourselves and in the world around us.
Exactly. And maybe that's the true legacy of Gnosticism, a call to awaken, to seek to connect, and to bring more light into the world, one spark at a time.
I love that.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Gnosticism. Until next time, keep seeking. Keep exploring and keep those sparks shining bright.